Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the very first episode of Storytelling in the Tropics. My name is Alison Harrison, and today our first guest is someone that I've known all my life, and I've had the honor of learning under his tutelage how to drive. I don't think that there's a vehicle that I cannot maneuver, and that's because of this man that we're talking to today. His name is Audley Harrison, my father. And I thought it fitting to interview and speak with my father to have him tell his story as the very first show in this series. And so let us begin. AKA teacher, Harry, talk about your early years growing up.
Well, early years growing up meant up to age 4, I lived at Nonsuch, where I was born, a little village 5 miles overlooking the town of Port Antonio. After those 4 years, I moved from living with my mother and father and siblings to live with my aunt a mile out of Port Antonio, a little village called Breastworks.
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 So yes. why were you the one to go and live with your aunt?
Well, you see, all during my life, my wife will tell you that I love to talk. And one of the memories I have of my childhood is I had my aunt who had no children, and on one of her visits to the family in Nonsuch, she approached my father and said to him, "Listen, you have all the children here with you. I have no children, and I'm kind of lonely. Why don't you send one of the children to live with me?" My father laughed, and he said, "It's not for me to send, it's which would like to go." So a number of us were sitting in the yard. Thank God all of us weren't, because I might not have fallen to that.
All of your siblings? How many siblings do you have?
My parents had 8 boys and 1 girl.
The girl is the first.
The girl is the first. And in response, my father said, just tossed out a question to us, which one of you want to go and live with your aunt? Completely, having no idea what it was going to mean, I said, "I will go."
How old were you?
I would have been about 4 years old.
4?
4 years old.
Mm-hmm. You don't know nothing at 4?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. But I was willing to make the plunge.
Right.
And so, in a couple of days, I was packing my little kit and heading off down the hill with Auntie, my little bag on my back, to live at Breastworks.
And how long did you live at Breastworks?
I would have lived at Breastworks maybe for 5 years. 5 years.
Till you were 9, 10.
Till I was 9, 10. And then, on leaving Breastworks, Auntie and I went to live at the old Catholic convent in Port Antonio, where she landed a job to clean and take care of the church, and also to take care of the ground floor of the old convent where there was a commercial school. Mm-hmm. Young ladies were taught shorthand, English, and the other rudiments of secretarial work.
Just a bit of info for the viewers and listeners is we are outside in one of Daddy's buses, and so we are sort of at the mercy of the elements. The environment is not as controlled as we would like it to be, but we are in the tropics. So Yes. So you moved to the convent.
Yeah. I should share with you, though, that my aunt was not only a guardian. My aunt was my basic school teacher. My aunt was my spiritual advisor. And my aunt was my first tutor in the skills of carpentry.
Carpentry?
Carpentry. And construction. Because at age 6 or 7, me and my aunt, we built a house that we lived in from scratch. She was a phenomenal woman.
That's interesting.
Phenomenal woman. We built it from scratch. I think the only thing that she hired someone to do was put the roof on.
Right.
But we did the rest of it.
What were the materials that you used to build
the
house?
The materials were wood and bamboo. Bamboo split in pieces maybe 4 or 5 feet long and an inch wide. And that would do the sides of the house. The floor was wood. And of course, it was situated on a hillside, so we had to put it on a kind of stilt to level it. Inside of the wall, she used old newspaper and magazines to paste and cover the walls. That was my first classroom.
Did she ever tell you where she learned this, all of this information from?
She just gathered it over the years. She was a one woman. She was a lone woman. She just did things on herself. She was very independent. And she tended to do things for herself.
Okay, so you lived with your aunt. What was high school like for you?
High school at Titchfield was... it was a very short journey. Met a lot of friends. Reading hard boys' books. Matter of fact, I lived a 10-minute walk from school on the Titchfield Hill. I played sport, played some cricket, played some football. I majored in West Indian history, English literature. Life at Titchfield was exciting. We majored in West Indian history. I loved the history of Jamaica, English literature. I had fun attending the seminar at Del Mar Theatre in Port Antonio, which is just a walk to the foot of Titchfield Hill.
What kind of movies is this at the cinema?
Batman, Robin.
Black and white or in color?
Black and white. Black and white. Also, I was given the privilege by Auntie to go to stage shows with people like Toots Hibbert, Byron Lee and the Dragonaires, those people from good old school, you know?
Right.
I read a lot of Hardy Boys. There was a group of us guys who at Titchfield just circulated the Hardy Boys. While I was in fourth form, the church decided to close down the school at the convent where we lived. And so the services of my aunt were terminated and we had to move. One thing in my life, I have done a lot of moving.
To this day.
Yes.
To this day.
And so we packed up and we left Port Antonio to reside for a couple months at a place called Riversdale near Windsor in the hills of Portland.
Right.
Going towards Moortown.
Right.
I had to travel by bus. It was a bit uncomfortable going to school, but it was just for a couple of months until it was time to move again. And so guess where we moved to? Back to Nonsuch.
Right.
Only this time I continued to live with my aunt at a rented place. And now she had to buy me a bicycle so that I could ride to school during my fifth form years. And one of the memories I have of riding to school is a lot of these roads were unpaved that we traveled on. And there was this morning when I was late and I was riding too fast. And so I got to the end of the minor road where it enters the major road. And without taking due care, I tried to make the corner and ended up in the gravel and the marl all over. Color of my knees and my elbows changed. It was all red.
Yes.
That was a lesson in itself. But we went through GCE.
And what is GCE?
The General Certificate of Education.
That is what would have been CXE now?
That is what would have been CXE now, yes.
Okay.
And I did my ordinary levels there. And after graduation, continued living in Nonsuch and went into employment at age 19. I worked with the Ministry of Agriculture. And then out of a strong influence from the local principal and a team of teachers at Nonsuch Primary School, I was encouraged to go into teaching.
Right.
And I shared this with my father. This was a decision that we had to consider deeply. Because I already had a job. But what the principal of the school, late Calvin Platt, taught me is that there's a difference between a job and a profession.
Right.
And I should try to get myself a profession. So we got accepted on application to Church Teachers College in Mandeville. It's a far away.
Right.
But
does that still exist?
Oh, yes, it does.
Church Teachers College.
Church Teachers College in Mandeville. And being a Church Teachers College offered me an opportunity, I think, that prepared me for life. It was 2 years, after which we did a year internship. But the 2 years that we lived among 234 other students were years when we had to battle each other, shared journeys, disagreements. But I think it went a far way to mold me into the individual I am now.
So they have like what we would call grubbing, like for the fresh.
Oh yes, we did.
For the fresh set of students.
Oh yes, we did.
What were some of the things that they wanted you to do?
Well, first of all, one member of the senior team, the senior group, approached me one day and said, "Grub, don't you see a senior approaching?" I said, "Yes, I see a senior." And she said, "Madame Senior, not Senior, Madame Senior." I looked at her and I said, "Okay, Madame Senior." And she said, "Are you satisfied with the condition of my shoes?" I looked at them and I said, "If I say yes, I won't have to clean them. But if I say no, I will have to clean them." So I said to her, "I think they're just fine." She smiled. The other two ladies who were with her smiled. I think they realized they were caught.
Right, right.
And so I became a smart grub. Became a smart grub.
So you didn't have to do many of these?
I did not have to do many, but later on when I joined the Students' Council, we had to settle a lot of those matters. Granted, ragging, as they called it, were less, let me say, it was far more civilized than the other college where the cows went in Kingston. I am sure that they will know.
The cows went?
Yes. And also
wood schooler.
Those people who were short of wood in Kingston. We were
and my mother's college. My mother's college. Let me just plug that. I don't know if I'll ever get to speak with my mother and have her tell her story, but she went to Shortwood. Continue, Daddy.
Yeah, we regarded ourselves and soon got the reputation of the more elite college, you know? Church.
Yes.
Church.
Yes.
Church. Enjoy the years. Specialize in the teaching of physical education and West Indian history. Graduated in, it's been a long time, 1971. And I was sent to do my internship at a little place in the foothills of the Blue Mountains called Trinityville in St. Thomas. Mm-hmm. Right. Arriving in Trinityville, I had a whole set of new experiences. By the way, it was at Trinityville, at Robert Lightburn Secondary, that I met and married the love of my life.
Who's the love of your life, Audley Harrison?
It was Esmond Campbell then.
Then?
But I corrected the name to read.
Corrected?
Yes, Esmond Harrison. You know, I remember going to the first staff meeting.
This was in 1971.
In 71, yes. In September.
The school year of 1971.
Yeah, in September of 71.
Yes.
First staff meeting for the year. And I sat across the room. I looked over and I saw this little girl sitting on the opposite side. She wasn't looking at me, but I saw her. And I wondered whether she should be in school uniform.
Really? She looked young.
Oh, she was. She was a little doll.
That's why they call her Barbie.
Ah.
Is that where she got the name? Or you gave her that name?
No. Her brother, one of her brothers, Lydie, gave her that name.
Okay.
And so I marked her, put a mark on her, and pursued her for a number of years. Finally got her to say yes.
Hold on. Let's talk about those years. Back in 1971, what are you doing to court a young Esmond Campbell?
I'm sharing my lunch.
You're sharing your lunch?
I'm sharing my lunch, yes. And I'm trying to do the things that she think are the right things to be done. Because, you know, I lived about 5 miles from where she lived then.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just say that life for me was kind of free and irresponsible at the time. And when she and I spoke, she a bit stronger than suggested that those are not the right things that you should be engaging in your life, like, you know, drinking and staying out late at night. You're a teacher and the children are looking up to you. You have to give a good impression. And that also helped me to mold my character.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw the attributes and I said, yes, this must be for a lifetime. So in 1974, well, she agreed before, but we tied the knot in 1974.
All right, so you decided to ask for her hand in marriage in 1974. Take us through that.
Yeah, some people only ask for the hand.
Mm-hmm.
I asked for all of her.
Right.
So, we got married in 1974. And it was time to move again.
Mm-hmm.
We opened, we set up house in Trinityville, and that was where our first angel was born, the first of three angels, Lisa. Mm-hmm. My tenure at Trinityville Secondary continued until 1976, mm-hmm. when I moved on to the Ministry of Youth and Community Development for a job as a sports development officer for Western St. Thomas. That continued until 1983, when I stopped working for the government and opened my own business. For many years, one of my past students, who was a transport operator, invited me to join him. Mm-hmm. By buying a bus and, as he would say, make some money. Mm-hmm. But for me, that decision was not going to be an easy one, because moving from a set salary to income that was not secure for a young man who had just gotten married.
And you would have had all three children at that time.
Yes. Was a timid one. But when my employment ended in 1983, I took the plunge. Mm-hmm. By then, we had moved to our own house, which we bought in Seaforth. And so I bought my first minibus in 1983.
What model was it?
Oh, my Lord. That would have been about a 1978 Peugeot bus. For some people, they were a nightmare, because we who bought them to commute in the public system had bought them off members of the JUTA, Jamaica Union of Travelers Association. Mm-hmm. That association had procure those buses to work in the tourist industry. And after 3-4 years, these were in turn sold off, mm-hmm. to operators who were commuting on the road.
Right.
I was fortunate, because my bus was the only bus bought and which was used in St. Thomas. And I was able to resell that bus. Every other bus, some were left by the side of the road. Mm. Some were left in the garage. But every other bus perished. I remember the day we sold that bus. I met the purchaser in Kingston. He tested the bus. He said it's okay. He wants it. He has been watching the bus. He knows it. And I said, okay, well, you know the price. I said, let's go to the bank. Mm-hmm. I walked out of the bank with a check. I grabbed hold of the first caissons Leland bus that was passing through Morant Bay from Kingston en route to Port Antonio. Mm-hmm. Got off the bus at the National Commercial Bank in Morant Bay. Mm-hmm. Rushed inside. The loans officer saw me. And he came out. He said, what can I do for you? I said, this is yours. Opened the envelope, took the check, looked at it, and he called the manager and he said, you have to come. He handed the manager the check, and the manager says, oh my God, you sold the bus? I said, yes. He said to the guy, process the check immediately before it. They block it. And I was able to clear the debt from the loan. And I had a little bit left. Mm-hmm. But I went home and slept for 14 days. Because I was relieved. I felt that a burden had moved off my back.
In terms of clearing your debt?
Clearing the debt and getting rid of that bus. So where do we go from there? I was already in the bus business, and so I decided to go back to the market, and we bought a second bus. Operated that bus for a year. The income, however, with three kids, was somewhat insufficient.
Right.
And a lot of people then were looking north to head for America to try their hand at getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed suit. I went to Florida, did some saving, but I yearned for my family. And so after a couple months, I opted to return home. When I returned home, I realized that the financial demands of the children going to school, etc., was going to mean a deeper immersion into the business if I'm going to survive.
What did you do in the States?
I drove a budget rental car.
Really?
My job basically was receiving cars when the customers brought them back, moving the cars to the wash area, moving them from the wash area to the storage area. It was also part of my job to check each car that came in to ensure that the customers had not left any of their possessions in there and that the car was intact as far as lights, mirrors, stuff like that.
How did you get that job?
How did I get that job? Oh, I got registered with a employment agency,
mm-hmm.
and they placed me there.
Okay.
So.
You're back in Jamaica now. You're back in the bus business.
A friend of mine, who I called my godfather, in the contract transportation. You see, there's contract transportation and there's stage carriage transportation. We are contract, you are employed to do a specific task with a specific group.
Right.
Stage carriage is operating from one point in the country along a prescribed route to another point.
Mm-hmm.
A number of trips for the day. And so, up to this time, I was commuting on the Morant Bay to Kingston route.
Right.
And I also developed a clientele for among schools and churches for excursions, for transportation to fun days, conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And so the clientele was steadily building. And when I had my eyes placed on a bigger unit to seat more persons, I approached the Jamaica United Travelers Association.
JUTA.
Yes, for membership. And it was my godfather, I call him my godfather, who advised me. So he said to me, these buses are coming. They're going to be costing X. I said, hey, hold on. Where do I get that money? He said, the bank is financing everything. I said, no. I'm not borrowing all that money, man. I'm not borrowing all that money. I didn't take up his offer. Continued my used buses. Repairing. At nights we'd come in, we'd service the buses. We'd be doing stuff under the buses. And I remember there was this one particular afternoon I came in and we were working, I think, on the brakes or something for the bus. And my third daughter, Allison, by then we had bought her a tricycle.
That's me.
Sweet. And while I was under the bus, she had elevated one of the back wheels of the tricycle on a little ledge in the driveway, as if she had jacked it up. And she had a screwdriver and she was touching every little nut and bolt on that as I was doing under the bus. And I said to myself, that girl is the son that I never had.
To this day. To this day.
Needless to say, there were nights when it was time for Allison to get washed up and put off the bed, and my wife Babs had to find her under the bus where we were working. And so, maybe 3 years after that offer from the president in Port Antonio, I heard he was selling one of the buses that he had bought, and I approached him and he said, imagine, you did not want to buy this bus for half then of what I'm selling it for now, but you want to buy it now. That's not very smart of you.
Right.
But you want it, I'll sell you.
Right.
I felt foolish, but I needed increase in seating capacity for the fleet, so I said, okay, I'll go. Talk about contract transportation. It was during this time that I landed my first formal contract with the Goodyear plant in Morant Bay.
What year was this?
This would have been about 1990, early 90s. Can't remember the exact date, early 90s.
Mm.
And we got this job to work 3-hour shifts, bringing in and taking off the workers. There were those nights when I might have been out on doing an driving an excursion, and my wife Babs had to fill in as a driver,
right,
to take the workers in and take them off.
Yes.
So it was a full team, all hands on deck. When Hurricane Gilbert came in 1988, it did extensive damage to properties, and for me, it was the birth of a new era, because the United Methodists from the United States were sending down teams, missionary groups, into Jamaica to assist in the reconstruction of churches, of manses, doing vacation Bible schools. And I got onto these groups and extended my operation much to my benefit. The groups grew to include medical teams, all kinds of work. And for many years, we were gainfully employed. This operation assisted greatly in funding the education of my first daughter when she went off to Barry University in Miami. And also kick-started the education at the University of Miami for Sherry, my second daughter. So it played a major role. And up to COVID, it's the advent of COVID that has really curtailed my engagement with these groups.
Right.
I continue to do contract transportation. But like I said, with COVID, our operations have gone down to zero since last year, March.
So how have you been coping?
Well, we have had to lean into savings. And we are being greatly assisted by the children who understand and are greatly involved in taking us through our day-to-day demands.
So, business was good during those years. So, but I guess you felt, or there may have been something missing. So that was more internal. So talk to us about your journey into the Catholic Church.
My journey in with the Catholic Church goes back as far as when I was 6 years old. You will recall I lived with my aunt then. And we lived at the old convent in Port Antonio. This old convent was situated just across the street from Our Lady Star of the Sea Catholic Church in Port Antonio. And part of my daily routine was to be at Mass Monday to Friday, 6:30, every morning. I became an altar boy, an altar server.
Didn't know that.
And my growth in the church began then. My experiences with different aspects of the faith. Much of my own personal conviction is founded on my Christian belief and what I try to convert to principles in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And in the year 2000, I accepted an invitation to enter the diaconate.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the invitation came a couple of years before, but I attended St. Michael's Theological Seminary, which later became Center.
Mm-hmm.
We were accepted. I said we because my wife attended every training session. It was part of the course. It was a requirement. Every training session, which meant 2 weekends per month, living, and also practical, practicing within the church.
Mm-hmm.
In 2000, I was ordained a permanent deacon for the Archdiocese of Kingston.
Right.
I continued to serve my local church community here in St. Thomas.
So we've gone through your early years. We've gone through your time with your aunt, high school, teachers' college, getting married, starting a family, entrepreneurship, well, working with the government, then your transition to entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
But same way within the entrepreneurial realm, what other interests do you have? What else are you working on? What are your interests outside of your professional and family obligations?
Babs and I have always wanted to plant stuff, to grow stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And our journey in agriculture has taken us through the rearing of pigs.
Mm-hmm.
At the back of the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
We had cows,
mm-hmm.
which Babs, when I was on the road with the buses, Babs had to go and tie them out in the mornings and return them in the afternoon. But like I said, we had always wanted to plant stuff, to watch things grow. And when Babs retired in 2011, I think, we had a lot of time on our hands, and so we looked around and a friend of ours introduced us to a piece of land, and we just went into the hills and started planting. Now we plant coconuts, plantains, bananas, pineapples, watermelons, and we have a lot of fun watching these things grow. Recently, we started our own home vegetable garden,
mm-hmm.
you know, and having a lot of fun with that. It's hard work because there's no running water through the property, and so we have to use the pickup truck to load on water and take it up the hill. So I'm on one side of the pickup with a bucket, tossing up water into some drums on one side. And who is on the other side?
Mommy.
Mommy's on the other side, filling up. And we're having a race as to who's going to fill up their bucket, their drum first. But it's been fun. one of the things that I benefit from in this exercise is I love to get away from the community where we live, because up on the farm, it's all but the wind blowing through the trees and the sound of the birds. We have a lot of parrots, parakeets up there.
Parakeets?
Yes, and they make a lot of joyful noise, and we're saying we are singing to the Lord. So for us, it's a lot of peace and tranquility and away from the hustle and bustle. So we'd load up some lunch and head to the hills in the mornings, and we'd be there all day. We get tired, we relax, and then we do stuff. But it's been good. It's been good, and it's been growing. Adding a bit of commercial aspect to it, but that has been curtailed due to lack of capital, lack of earning through COVID. But we enjoy it. It keeps us fit, keeps us active. It's good exercise.
So one of the, at the beginning, when I introduced you, I mentioned one of your aliases, which is teacher. I'm not sure anybody really knows the story behind teacher. Well, to be honest, I thought that because you were a teacher and your students would pass and say, teacher. So I thought that was where it came from. So please give us the story behind the nickname teacher.
Interesting. During my years as a bus operator on the Morant Bay to Kingston Road, I bought a particular brand bus. And maybe 2 months after, a second operator bought an identical bus. And we were on the same route, Morant Bay to Kingston. And our operation included ferrying passengers to Kingston, ferrying back passengers to Morant Bay. And we do that 3 trips per day. So we'd form a line in Kingston and wait on our turn to get loaded. And there was this day, of course, very important in the transportation system is who became known as the backup men. Backup meaning they help to back up the operators of the units to get them filled as quickly as possible.
So it's not the conductor.
It's not the conductor.
It's the assistant.
It's an additional person
right.
who works with just about every bus that comes in, yes? And this person, you know, technically all they do is, you know, point at the bus and say, Miss, you're going to St. Thomas, Morant Bay. That's the bus going to Morant Bay. Come in, take a seat. And of course, they get something for the effort.
Right.
So I remember, by coincidence, the other guy's bus, which was identical to mine, came into the line immediately behind mine, eh?
Yeah.
And the backup man who was loading the bus approached a lady and he said to her, Come miss, teacher bus there. And actually no, he didn't say teacher bus, he said, it's Mr. Harrison bus there.
Right.
And she said, so who is the other bus? And the gentleman replied, I don't know. What's his name? And eventually, it was revealed that the other guy's name is also Harrison.
Really?
So yes, you had two Harrisons with two identical buses. So
I did not know that, but okay. Yes.
When the guy got the bus loaded and we're leaving, he said, I'll have a talk to you when you come back to Kingston. So I came to Morant Bay, made a return to Kingston, and he approached me and he said, listen to me. You have to put a name on the bus. I said, what do you mean a name? He said, don't you see? The two buses look the same. The two owners have the similar name. The people want to know. Which is your boss from the other man boss? Because there might be somebody who wants to drive with you, he doesn't want to drive with that guy.
Right.
So I said, I don't know about a name. What name am I going to put on the bus? And he looked at me and he says, don't ask me. You're a teacher. You should know. Put teacher on the bus.
Well, there you go.
It was then that the bus was labeled teacher and I was nicknamed teacher.
So teacher, you have three girls. Lisa, the first, Sherry, the second, and me, Allison, the washbelly. Washy, as you would you would call it, washy. So, talk to me about us, your three girls.
Well, you mentioned Lisa. And Babs and I and Sherry and yourself will be eternally grateful for the motherly care that Lisa would have extended to both of you.
Of course.
When you studied in the United States.
Absolutely.
She was definitely an anchor, a provider, a guardian, a mother, a parent. And we will be forever grateful to her.
She is. She still does that.
If I might put Sherry for third, I would like to mention you, Allison. And one of the thing, one of the memories that stand out in my mind is that September morning when you decided not to return to the University of the West Indies to complete your studies. I was furious, but your mother cautioned me and told me to leave you be. Little did I know at the time that your protest was aimed at your pursuit of your own personal goal. The area of study that you were interested in and wanted to pursue at the university was not being made available. And
it wasn't available at all.
It wasn't available. And so you knew what you wanted, and what they were offering you did not want it, and so you stood down. And soon after, your protest was to end in a couple of months when you were accepted by the Miami
International
University
of Art and Design
to pursue a course in cinematography.
Well, film and digital production is what the degree is.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it had been your love for years, and that has blossomed into a reality for you now, of which I am very proud. Sherry is somewhere in the middle, and I recall Sherry telling us a story of her English teacher at Immaculate saying to her, Sherry, you are no good at English literature. However, Sherry went on to major in English and Caribbean studies and is now a professor at the Missouri University. Mm-hmm. When I mention Sherry, I cannot help but mention Andy, her husband, and the light of my life, Harrison, my grandson.
My nephew.
Each day that I go to my phone or on the computer and see Harrison engaged in some activity, it makes me so proud of my family. And I look forward every day to be with him, to be playing with him, to be talking with him, to be engaged with him, because he's a beam of light that keeps his grandmother and I looking out, just to see him, to hold him and to hug him and to love him. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Daddy, a.k.a. teacher, a.k.a. Mr. Harrison. It's our first guest for Storytelling in the Tropics. This is episode 1. I've been talking with Daddy about his journey through his life in Nonsuch Portland to where he is today. Stay tuned to this channel. Subscribe, please, and stay tuned for more interesting stories from our island home, Jamaica. Thank you.